couple of visuals. This is an old book called The Beat Hotel.
Yeah.
He became quite famous. And there, it's in his 30th printing in Germany. How about that? A little info here. He published it first time in 60 something. Well, interesting story about his book, The Beat Hotel. It's a first cut-up novel. What is a cut-up novel? It's a collage. We are artists and poets here who are practicing collage poetry. Collage poetry started somewhere in Tristan Tzara's head in 1915, 1916, when he cut pieces, put them in a hat, and extracted them on stage, creating instantaneous Dada poems.
What do you do with the hat?
The hat, you mix the words inside the hat that the choosing would be aleatory, or in your language, by chance. So, cut-ups was really reinvented by the Beats living in the Beat Hotel, William Burroughs, Brian Gyson, and of course, Harold North. His real name was Harold Rosen. He was born in Brooklyn, a boy chick from Brooklyn, from a Russian Jewish mother. The father is a little unknown, even to a detective like me, who researched a little bit. Supposedly he's a German-American soldier. That's as close as I could identify him. And, but Brooklyn, okay? So, this is one of the books. Interesting that after Harold North wrote about 270 pages of this manuscript, he left for a voyage to India and left his manuscript in the Beat Hotel and asked, you know, Gregory and Alan and everybody who was left there in the hotel to, you know, to hold for him the manuscript. When he came back, his things were gone. And from the manuscript, there is only 50 pages left. And that's what it became, the famous Beat novel and the first cut-up novel. It's just a remnant of a much bigger work that was, you know, intended. So I don't want to worry, you know, bore you with more details. But I will bore you with a story about Giuseppe Gianchino Belli. And this is a 19th century Roman poet who writes in a very slangy kind of language about the hustlers on the street and all the things that are happening in Rome. And Harold, when he first moved to Rome, he was totally blown away that in 19th century would be such a writer, who wrote 200 sonnets. 200 sonnets. So, yes, it's kind of unbelievable that he discovered that slang that he used in Brooklyn, the Italian slang, you know, ma fanculo, mascalzone, you know, he would find those words actually in Belli's poetry. So he translated them, and you know, the rest is history. And he is compared now to Ovidiu and Catullus as a erotic and homoerotic poet. So I think I'm going to start. Okay, this was just a little introduction. Harold lived in 157 Albion Street, San Francisco. And he died there. Very recently. He was born, though, right here in New York in 1916. And, you know, like, this is a photo of his taken by Allen Ginsberg. He didn't get along too well with Allen Ginsberg, but this is a photo taken in 1988, and Allen writes underneath, Harold Norse, poet, San Francisco, with all my affection. In his kitchen. Yeah, he does. Places where it was done in his kitchen. So, you know, he went to NYU. Well, first to Brooklyn College for his BA, then he went to NYU. And in 1939, he read in a newspaper that W.H. Auden and Isherwood are coming to New York for the first American poetry reading. And he said, yuppie. And him and his boyfriend went to the reading and sat in first seats and winked at them shamelessly. And guess what? W.H. Auden fell in love with Harold's lover and pursued him, and he became his lover till the end of W.H. Auden's life. They lived on the corner of St. Mark's Place and First Avenue, and a circle of literati around W.H. Auden was completed with Chester Coleman and Harold Norse, W.H. Auden and Christopher Isherwood. So that's how the history sort of starts, in a very simple way. Then, of course, for me, the most important thing is that his poetry made a perfect sense and made the connection between the American beats and European surrealism and European avant-garde. And in 1951, Williams, Carlos Williams, declared Harold Norse as the best poet of his generation. And that, of course, created a little bit of unhappy feelings in Allen Ginsberg and even in the late Frank O'Hara, who rose from his grave to challenge, you know, I am the best. So the relationship wasn't like, you know, great between him and the beats at all times. Nevertheless, the cut up that I was talking before, the cut-up experiments, really were very important in the development of fiction cut-up and poems cut-ups that become, you know, the most perfect example of degeneration in avant-garde, in colluding together with the French surrealist and neo-surrealist, like Jacques Lebel and Brian Geisen, and who are pursuing that, and they lived in Paris till the end. Brian Geisen lived there till the end of his life. So, on this side of the ocean, Harold is much less recognized, and only in 1974, Ferlinghetti finally publishes one of his books under the name Hotel Nirvana. And I would recommend you to find, as a matter of fact, go on Amazon's, and there are incredible buys there right now for Harold. You know, you can buy for $5-6 any of his books, and they're great. Like, for example, this book. It's a big book with all of his poems. Top of the Fiery Force by Harold Norse. Wow, it even rhymes. Collected poems from 1934 to 2003. Fiery Force. Hop in the hub of the fiery force.
I'll give you $5 for it right now.
No, no, it's $7.98 on Amazon, plus shipping, so handling and haggling and heckling. He was very lucky that he would get like an award, you know, like in school he would get an award, and in Brooklyn College he get an award, and he got like 2 NEAs, and he was very lucky at that, but he was not lucky in recognition, you know. It's unbelievable how in many books, you know, that he edited Brian Geisen a book, The Last Museum, and he's not even mentioned as living in the same hotel with them, you know. So that's, you know, that's a little bit sad, and I'm trying to, you know, to protest against amnesia of the famous poets like Harold North. In your program, you will find the reprint of the New York Times op-ed that already became controversial because the writer got accused that he plagiarized it off the internet. And I went today on the internet, and I didn't find that much plagiarism, but nevertheless, he was accused already in the blogosphere of these things. So I would like just to give you one more detail about his incredible life and how many books he published. He published, I think, 18 books, for example, you know, to show how a person becomes controversial. He wrote this poem and published it in Saturday Review called The Victor Emmanuel Monument, in which he was expressing, you know, his disapproval. You know, Victor Emmanuel Monument in Rome is a fascist kind of monument and it's only worshipped by the fascists. So, you know, of course, he also made some comments about that, you know. Immediately they declared him communist and tried to, like, get him out, deported from Italy for communist propaganda. You know, so no. That's not it. It's very interesting that I will finish my story about Giuseppe Gianchino Belli. You'll remember that name, 19th century poet from Rome. James Joyce tried to translate him without good results. D.H. Lawrence trying to translate him without good results. Norse translated 56 sonnets on his first try and was published in Hudson Review. And he said he translated them with a dictionary in one hand and Roman, parenthesis, hustler in the other. So that's how he translated, because he had to ask him about this slang terminology that he wouldn't know. You know, it was not in the dictionaries. In Paris, he lived in the same flat that Arthur Rimbaud lived. Interesting, eh? How things are going. And then he came to the Beat Hotel because William Burroughs invited him and said, you have to help Brian Geisen to edit his stuff. And meanwhile, Jan Somerville, a French mathematician, and Brian Geisen were cutting these weird things in a paper and doing this little sort of like cones and spheric and cylindrical, mostly, things that they would put on a pickup and it will turn around with a bulb inside. And it was a sculpture to be looked with closed eyes. And actually you would get high, because if you close your eyes and these cutouts just sort of spin and leave a light pattern on your eyes, you start tripping, which sort of. Or if you are tripping, it's good to look at her. So you figure that. But those were called the dream machines, built by Brian Geisen and Jan Somerville, a French mathematician and surrealist. I'm just reading you from my little notes that I take from time to time. He wrote this book called Carnivorous Saint. And then underneath, Gay Poems, 1941-76. Yeah, he was something else. He was translated in German, French, Italian, Greek, Dutch, Tamil, Japanese, Arabic, and in Romanian by me. Okay, so I'm going to invite Angelo Verga to come and help me out here and to invoke Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om Mani Padme, Om of Harold Norse. And now, Angelo Verga.
I was going to impress you with everything I knew about Harold Norse, but he said everything I knew in the first few minutes, actually. The one thing I do want to do is thank Kathy for putting this together. In November, I lost my food stamps. The computer said I did not exist. In November, I lost my best friend who said I did not exist. In November, I lost my manuscripts and felt as if I did not exist. In November, I sent two postcards to my mother, who wrote back saying she had not heard from me, and did I still exist? In November, I paid the telephone bill and received a final notice for non-payment. In November, my girlfriend accused me of unreality and infrequency with a tendency to dematerialize on weekends and holidays, even Jewish ones, and stormed out, leaving a sink full of dirty dishes and linen blackened by her feet, souvenirs of blood and tobacco burns. In November, my checks bounced, mail stopped arriving, the toilet clogged, the cat choked, my poems were rejected, I got worms, the clap, and psoriasis of the anus. All I needed was an earthquake to prove my destiny was not to be overlooked. And one was long overdue, according to the latest reliable heavenly and scientific sources. In November, I looked for all my published works in City Lights bookstore and found only my early translations of Belly. I did not exist on the bookshelves, although a thesis to prove that I did exist was written by some kid in Arkansas, 300 pages that nobody ever read, called Orpheus Unclaimed, Harold Norse, So What? In November, I gave a poetry reading, which was so well advertised one day in advance that five people actually came, four of them drunk and cantankerous, the fifth had lost his way to the toilet, and one of the drunks kept asking, tell me how to win. I'm sick of being a loser. And I answered from years of eminence, be invisible. In November, when I crossed the street with the light, a gray-haired man in a Cadillac looking like Spiro Agnew tried to run me down and swore because he missed me, something about law and order. In November, I screamed at the neighbors upstairs who played stereo hard rock all night and day that crashed through the floorboards, but they said I was a liar. It was music, not noise. And I was a fink for complaining. And the one who practiced karate over my bedroom from midnight until 3 a.m. said, why didn't I take up yoga and gain deliverance from bad karma? So they went on playing their rock and hammering on the floor and stomping in boots and breaking bricks until 4 a.m. as I did not exist. And in November, I gave thanks for all my blessings without a turkey, with one good ear, high cholesterol, 59 cents, 145 pounds, and two good balls.
Thank you. you. Thank you, Angela. This was fabulous. Okay, I'm going to bring George Wallace in a second. And before that, I just another little gossip on Harold. At one time, he took a break from his homosexuality and fell in love with a Russian princess. Her name was, she looked like Madame Blavatsky. But her real name, Zina, we called her. But her real name was Zinaid Rakevsky, princess. So, and she was an incredible, incredible person. She was cut off from enormous wealth and, you know, tried everything from drug dealing to being prostitute to becoming a Zen monk in Kathmandu. And actually she died there of mysterious circumstances. But the poem called The Sniffing Keyholes, that he wrote, it's dedicated to Zina. And now I'm going to bring a scholar and a poet, George Wallace. Give them hell.
Damn, I gotta be a scholar. Well, listen, I'm not gonna read a Harold Norris poem, although I've read many of them, and I brought the love poems with me, and I recommend this book very much. It's fabulously sensual for anybody of any sort of sexual iteration. You'll have a good time reading these poems. But I do have a poem that I wrote that mentioned Harold Norris in it. I used to read about driving down the BQE and being late to come here to Cornelia Street Cafe because of the traffic. And the reason why he was in it is because he and Chester Coleman, the day that they chased down W.H. Auden after that reading, they found him in an apartment house with Mae West, where the BQE is now located, and they broke in and knocked on the door and entered. And that's how they happened to meet W.H. Auden. And so I thought that was appropriate. Thing to mention was Chester Coleman and Harold Norris and the BQE all in one poem. But I think that wasn't good enough. So Thursday, I wrote this poem specifically for Harold. And I did check with some people in San Francisco to make sure I wasn't violating any confidences or mischaracterizing in any way. Jack Foley, particularly from KPFA, said, no, you got it about right, so I'll read it to you. It's called There Goes the Night. There goes the night, gone like an A-bomb, gone like a breeze, gone like a pink-tip Halloween lemonade dream with magicians and gay wizards in it. There you go, old barefoot boy with eyes like heat and day-glow haze. Oh, hashish humping hand-me-down, hard-riding hangover boy in the aftermath of bathhouse sex. You let us down on primrose knees, ogling the gas station guy with blue jean hair, shy choir boy. We liked you like we liked James Dean, tongue-tied seeker of the impetuous lay. You with your duct tape, small ponytail, filter-tipped and sexy as hell, Harold Norris, we never knew you. Where did your luck come from? Why did you sit in the Tuileries with Fauvists and Romanians? Why did you lie around all day like Nureyev? I remember you in crazy San Francisco. We loved you there. We loved you. We loved you not. We cooked for you and we took you for granted, cruising every alleyway of the American heartbeat. Oh, glam, bam, boy of steel, street hustler, there you were waiting at the corner, watching all the boys pass you by without a second look. You said you were not a man. But you were a man. Harold Norris, you were a man if there ever was one, even if we never caught you at it, even if you never knew it. Okay, Coney Island, knife blade, mad-minded boy of eucalyptus heart, oh, teeth print of God, oh, manhole, joystick, dragon lady, man of war, boy, there you were, Harold Norris, and now you are gone, like Chuck Berry's last guitar lick, like a Mako shark run up and onto the sand on Long Island with the tide in your mouth and with your toothpick smile and, yes, with your sullen sea rack hair. Some people loved you like nobody could ever love you. Some people loved you because you were worth it. You were worth it. Yes, you were worth loving Harold Norris with your eyes for the gun night, with your stickball manners, with your heart like burning coal, and in every sawdust paradise you ever denied entry to, and in every all-night movie house you slept in with sculptors, dancers, Pollocks, checkout boys, jazz musicians, and wayward priests. Oh, Harold Norris, you were a ball-busting Brooklyn boy in the halo of Cold War, all sexed up and ready to wear.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Bravo.
Well, one of the stars of the evening, Kyra Cullen, received a two-page poem from Harold in the book, in the hub of the Fiery Force.
Fiery
Force.
He's a fairy.
Invocation for Ira Cullen. Ira Cullen, magician, raconteur, photographer, Jew, kvetch, with bristling black beard, gold-carrying, bald-headed, long hair, and slinky sorcerer gown, sweeping through Amsterdam like a vampire, with silver glitter, caste mark, third eye logo. Namaste, Ira. I know your Stauffenberg psycho. Warning, stay out of Germany. The swastika swoops at your magic dome. The world shrinks like your heart. Achtung, stay in Cosmos, stay in Paradiso, stay in ins and outs, stay in the red light district, stay in the golden heart cock, stay in Amsterdam, stay out of Germany. Ira Cohen, mystic, visionary, psilocybin poet. I remember your first mescaline trip in Kasbah in Tangier when you were thin and clean-shaven, eyeing the mosaic in a hammam, flinging wide the doors of perception, teller of endless tales in New York monotone city voice. Namaste, Ira. I know your Ganawa. Warning, stay out of cold logic. The bald eagle swoops at your hashish head. The dollar shrinks like your heart. Achtung, Achtung, stay in the center, stay in the love zone, stay in the middle, stay in the nude, stay in the comic strip, stay in the dharma, stay in the smile, stay out of cold logic. Ira Cohen, doer, eater of fame, lover of name. Don't worry, it comes without asking. Don't chase it, don't sweat it, just let it happen like a growing hand. Forget the great society, we make it ourselves. We are the impossible dream. We connect when we scream. Namaste. I know your poems to Allen Ginsberg and Bob Dylan. Warning, stay out of power. The crown swoops at your pate. Holiness rings like your heart. Achtung, stay in the flame. Stay in the wonder. Stay in the tenderness. Stay in the splinter. Stay in the billiard. Stay in identity. Stay out of power. Stay. Ira Cohen, my dear friend, and the magician invoked by Harold Norris.
I should ask you to read my poems. Well, I knew Harold for many, many years also. And it's great to remember, have a day to remember him. And fantastic to hear Valerie's impassioned ravings and readings of Harold's poems. I don't think he ever sounded like that. But nevertheless, it was quite thrilling to hear. This is a poem called A Brickbat for Herman Brood, a Dutch writer, where P-78 meets wild romance in Paradiso. Senegalese soldiers are pissing on Bismarck's statue on the Rhine. I'm talking on the telephone with Charlemagne in Alamut East, Mr. Geisen. It was one of them black holes what fell into Mr. Burroughs' green hat. And Mr. Norris got the picture, of course. Death's got his arms open, man. A pyramid of will based on illusion rises to touch the razor blade sky. Fantastic how we all get by. The Japanese poet laughs real loud, declares himself a museum. It could only happen in Amsterdam, where the Flying Dutchman steers with Finch's eyes and speaks with simultaneous tongues to proclaim the data of love and fear. Take what you want, baby. There's a long way to go. Poetry is communication, and her harp is in her hands. It could only happen in Amsterdam. Apocalypse bubbles in the ear. We are not serving shadows, punky junkies flailing the air. Let the bread stay in the bread box, Herman. I write your name down here. We are not inclined to go back. Our long hair summons the air. The song we sing clings to the streets as we, circling, circle the square. Fuck you, Jack. I'm on Houdini's elevator now. It's you who's staying down there. Watch Shushaku eat his partner's brain as we shout owl feathers, plutonium. The way in is the way out. Black, black, black brings light to doubt. Patti Smith queens your pawn. Anarchy prevails. It is poetry which breaks the bars of jails. Well, I'm just going to turn the page. I don't know what to read. Okay. April snow for Simon Vinkenhoek. Simon Vinkenhoek, a great Dutch writer and a great friend of many years, as Harold also was. I remember them both very much in the last days and mentioned them together in a poem, so it kind of made it that as two good friends I knew for years and years who both passed. This is a poem I wrote called April Snow for Simon Vinkenhoek. Written in wet snow, the history of a day consecrated to spring, amber fire reduces geography to a straight line between Gabon and Kashmir. Bituminous hearts intuit diamond clarity. This finger bone from Peru, dangling from my neck, signifying dissidence, says that we too are ancestors, and for those who will come seeking banners of truth, the legions of star lovers already on the way, it is enough to say what there is to say, that the voice is speaking in silence, that the ear is mute, but hears the silence of wet snow falling, that the song of man rises from the fall of man, and that singing we rise to challenge the course of destiny. Zebra poem. Face the light and your shadow will run behind you. If you can catch your own shadow, then you can catch any shadow. Shadowless in daylight is the master of his own shadow. And they say that the shadowless man is dangerous. Long live the zebra. And again you will be gone. The poet sees roses about to burst in the garden. When you are absent, the song grows, luminous templates of the passing presence. Khayyam spoke of Caesar's rose, where love and life have passed, another life seeks to grow. And there in the spaces you inhabit, what arctic rose, what tender thorn, will dare to grow as if by magic. What other night would follow night without your light to light it? Chanson. Drunken swallows in the time of severance, weak at the flowers already cut and dying. And as they swerve on the impressionable air, casting aspersion on trees while flying, a new season already come, brings its own rain, and with the rain, the winds, inconsolable sighing. An old friend, Valley Myers, maybe some of you remember her or knew her, red-haired vixen of the First Order, and covered with tattoos. She also gave me my first tattoo and so forth, which I'm not going to reveal here at the moment.
Oh, come on, Harry.
Come on. Take it off.
I'd only have to take my shirt off. It's not such a big deal. Anyway, I wrote a poem for Valley. She died at 72 about 3 years ago. Poem for Valley. Perhaps the Armenian carving elephants on a human hair between heartbeats can tell you better why you were born at midday during a storm, or what the Moroccan is thinking in the asylum. Perhaps he can tell you why the best sailors can't swim, or how to freeze two perfect tears on a Chinese face. Perhaps the fox holding an egg in her mouth can tell you better how red conquered the rain, or how the blue line curves around the nipple. And I am sure that the hound knows better the meaning of the maidenhair fern, or the secrets of lavender under pillows. But only the harpoon's whale can tell you as he turns, rising to the sun, how much he hates your blue-green eyes, how much a whale's heart weighs when it is finally undone. I never know how to cut into all the poems, and I don't even have them anymore. I don't know where they are. It's scattered around in the house somewhere or another, but at least I have this book and some others. But I'm going to say, just to read these next poems all coming together. Postcard to Amanda Utrillo. Revisions. Within one room and sealed therein our pact, yes, that she kissed me in the half-light leaning. Carolyn is dreaming of your sweet little face. Instead of kissing you, I apply a styptic pencil to a wet wound. I am not sure how to define the borders. I guess they just naturally define themselves. My mouth, though, runs beyond the confines of my face. The rain has destroyed the path, erasing the window you covered with lipstick. Her red cape brightening the gravestones near Clichy. You remember how it was before the needle closed the mouth of love with love? Mm-hmm. Hellgate. It's the veil of Isis. Every child can lift it. Touch the man who loves the asphalt, the macadamist who left his heart beneath the city streets. This paper flying like a Japanese balloon on the seventh day of the seventh moon will also come back to surprise the scholar, just as this viral love will penetrate future dreams of a nothing, which is more than nothing, a paper bird to astonish live cats under windows of unwritten scenarios, a poem meant to hang on the branch of a solitary moment between pastiched kisses and human indulgences, a cry of forgotten poppies in the jail of the city. Morning train to Zurich. Starting with the A's. When Akhmatova saw Apollinaire there on the withered shore, she said, let those who died first go first. It is our Russian law. Apollinaire refused, saying there is no first or last, only your indelible profile etched on the moving past. Then the mist, rising as they kissed, showed that they were no more, but you and I, dreaming of the sky, discover the keys on tomorrow's floor as the train goes by, as the train goes blackly by.
One more.
Okay. Who was that? The Days of the Penitence for Janine Fahmy Vega. You came to me in a dream wearing a black shawl, your blue wing hidden under your robe of penitence. Sister of grief, Dolores, oh Dolores, blonde sister in search of new skies, now leaving blood and bone behind, we wander together in search of our lost loves. This black innocence, which looks through skull eyes, knows that beauty, unlike youth, is a thing which comes and goes, that love is what the thorn feels for the rose. Oh. Well, okay. Acid flash for Pablo Neruda. In the destroyed oceans, vague dreams colored with bees in the absence of yellow, in the profound tailor shops and bakeries where suits of blood mingle with sacramental bread, monotonous as tyranny and fostered by railroads and eggshells. There you walk sadly among the detritus, discarded by the sensible tides on black beaches of eternity, your ring with no finger knew all the faces of death, hiding in wood, open doors of cloud or fog. You knew the tightening of valves, the color change on subtle horizons where stockinged feet step softly by lamplight. And in the lengthening shadow of your words still vibrating, we too follow the lure of pure bone to know, hermano mio, what your brother knew, hermano, with his back to the wall of history, enigmatic, yet perpetually divined. For Kemen Fryer, I began with the idea of dedicating a poem to you, made of that shattered blue, powdered with pollen and marble dust, and tuned to the nostalgia of a Greekless ear. But the two Egyptians rapping Arabic at the next table, and the news that gold has reached a new high, make me wonder what is this life we are dreaming. The Egyptian seaman says that 65 tons of hashish went up in smoke the night Om Kalsum sang. Also that he knows a boy more beautiful than any woman with only one arm and no legs, that napalm burns even stones and water. It is not possible to sit alone for long in Greece. Take fire and put it in your fingers. How many packs of cigarettes would Socrates smoke today? Sambellu 73, for Charles Henry Ford and Indra Bahadur Tamar. I came to enjoy your house today. After you poured us iced tea and swatted the flies, eating halva in my beard, telling me how you photographed Whiston and Ischia, it was 1952. And when you said, think of something sexy, you broke into a smile. We agreed that Chester is unfrequentable, and that it's already in print what Auden said to you. My face is like a wedding cake left out in the rain. The cicadas and anonymous birds make one hell of a racket at Zambellu 73. Operation Minotaur could not be imagined by your father, though Henri Cartier-Bresson got a great jump with the Leica in 1925. Was he there at the Leipzig Spring Fair? Carolyn is calling the Serpent of Dreams from the border of Ulaanbaatar, while you are cleaning house with a Greek sailor upstairs. It's siesta time, and under a blanket of foreskins, anything is permitted. I demand 200 drachmas a minute for trying to write a poem in August, especially since I feel as frivolous as the green grapes in your abalone shell. I'm not sure if we really want freedom from stray light, but when it comes to the life you are living, you could not wish for a better one. Easter Sunday. And here among the chosen people, their cells scrawled over with the graffiti of cancer, their lungs marked with amber and black, and jungles of plastic. Beads of perspiration indicate the mechanical heart's failure to surpass the standard set by the conveyor belt. As they stand on the brink of survival, programmed for slander, this is America, our land of illusion, where renegade barkers chant unholy liturgies and savants in wheelchairs sell palsy to the public, where bad jokes and artificial laughter bring plaudits to the ravaged purveyors of estrogen and oil. Everyone knows that things are better than ever, that our features will always be syndicated on rainy Easter Sundays, that there is still time to request a free ambulance if you have no money. For now, as Christ proves once again that he really loved the Romans, and I finally can see the Allied bombers flying over Auschwitz, saluting the crematoriums. And this time we are all allies, and our enemies will be banished by our bomb sites forever. We are home again. Oh, hallelujah. Beirut burns. I would hold my hand over my mouth, but I have no hands, and my skin is seared. A Buddhist once told me, perhaps it is better not to take a single step. But now one leg is a luxury. We leave our homes again, carrying with us one plate and a great despair. Between hunger and being fed up lies the history of war.
Okay, Ira, thank you.